afternoon. Welcome to Fathers, Family, and Healthy Communities Forum, presented by Fathers, Family, Healthy Communities. That's FFHC for short. I am Saquon Lawrence, Director of Fathers, Family, Healthy Communities Demonstration Project and co-moderator.
And I'm Dr. Kirk Harris, Senior Advisor for FFHC and co-moderator with my brother Saquon Lawrence.
FFHC is a demonstration project committed to engaging African-American non-custodial fathers to their children financially, socially, and emotionally so that African-American children will realize better outcomes and possibilities. So for the next 10 weeks, we will present FFHC's social marketing campaign called the New Man Project, which is an exploration and promotion of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family. We want to reimagine the role and image of black men and fathers and work towards a successful campaign for black male achievement. In addition, we'll lift up examples of affirmative black fatherhood, male-female relationships, and effective parenting. Among the topics we'll cover over the next 10 weeks are responsible fatherhood and definitions of manhood, rites of passage and mentoring programs for black youth, effective black leadership in the role of fathers as leaders in the community, black womenists who are allies of fathers, family, healthy communities like the organization Women in Fatherhood. We're also going to take a look at effective approaches to addressing health disparities between the black community and the larger society, examples of strong black families. We're going to take a look at fathers' role in educating the black child in the 21st century. Effective community-based organizations in the black community, both locally and nationally, will be examined. We'll also be checking and challenging the media's image of black men and fathers. Managing legal and personal responsibilities related to financial support of children will be examined. And lastly, effective workforce development and sector-driven job activity in Chicago will be looked at. So as you can tell, Fathers, Family, Healthy Communities' New Man Project is interested in what's good about the black family and community. So let's talk about fathers as assets. Let's examine our youth as a group with enormous capacity and possibility. Let's lift up the black woman as heroic placemakers in our community. Let's reintroduce ourselves to our culture and have a dialogue about its central role in our rescue and reassertion in society and the world. So what this means, then, is that FFHC is challenging ourselves and the community to dispense with debilitating talk, which emphasizes how bad our communities, fathers, politicians, leaders are, how bad our schools and families are, and instead promote solutions, promote examples of excellence and the best of what it means to be African-American and human in the world. So we thought for our first show, we start by talking about the Fathers, Family, Healthy Communities 2-year demonstration project to connect black non-custodial fathers to their children financially, socially, and emotionally, as we said earlier, so that their children will have better outcomes and life possibilities. By the way, we are taking calls this afternoon, so callers, the number is 773-591-1690. Again, that's 773-591-1690. So let's get started. I'm here with my friend and colleague and co-designer of the demonstration project, Dr. Kirk Harris. So Kirk, why don't you just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Saquon. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, working with you on this project creates a very exciting set of possibilities for what can happen in the community when we engage black men and when we get them focused on the things that's going to be most important to their children and their families. And you know, that's essentially what FFHC is about, Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities is about. It's about getting fathers effectively connected to their children, mm-hmm. and supporting them by removing some of the barriers that kind of confront them, mm-hmm. whether it be employment, whether it be around health issues, whether it be around legal issues, whether it be around the ability to navigate the relationship with the mother of their children. FFHC is essentially about helping men move beyond those challenges that potentially keep them away from serving as effective assets to their mm-hmm. children. And mm-hmm. and I just want to say, and as you know, how much we believe mm-hmm. in the concept of assets, mm-hmm. that essentially we need right. to start there, because we see so many images, so mm-hmm. many stories about what's wrong, as you indicated earlier. And we believe there's a lot right in our community, and we believe there's a lot right with our black men in our community. And if the right set of barriers are removed, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked a lot about this, so you know that I'm with you, and the fathers who are members in FFFC and our stakeholders agree with us. So why don't you just tell the listening audience about how this project came about and some of its key features?
Yeah. Well, the project essentially came about as a result of some work that you and I have been engaged in at least over the last 20 years, mm-hmm. and more specifically with a group called Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities that was hosted by Dr. Michael Bennett at DePaul. And over the last mm-hmm. 10 years, there was an effort to really think about the trends that were emerging in our communities around the fact that fathers weren't as engaged with their mm-hmm. children as they needed to be. And we also know that there's a distinct rise in female-headed households. And we know that has direct implications for the well-being of children. And that's not to say that moms aren't doing a heroic job in meeting the needs of those children. But, you know, raising children in this day and age is a complex process. Mm-hmm. And that complexity is both around financial, mm-hmm. it's around kind of the developmental with respect to the child, and it's around issues of protection and safety, mm-hmm. which are so critical to the well-being of children. Mm-hmm. And so FFHC really tries to look at these various components and look at the community as a resource for both mm-hmm. the father, the family, and the child. And we do that by doing a couple of things. One is we engage community-based stakeholders and service providers who become a part of a network of service who advance a certain set of objectives as it relates to promoting outcomes for fathers with the explicit mm-hmm. objective of promoting outcomes for children. And we can't forget that the reason that we're engaging fathers, the reason that we're doing this mm-hmm. work and we care about this so much is not only that we care about the fathers, because we do, we certainly care about the fathers, but the objective, ultimate objective, is to make sure that the kids are safe, they're getting what they need, and that mothers are partnered with to advance that outcome. And that's basically what FFHC is about. And we do that with the service partners. We do that by broadening that network of support for fathers. And I think there's a really powerful piece to this. And you know, you and I have had conversations about this, about mm-hmm. the work that happens when men come together mm-hmm. and talk with one another about their challenges and their problems mm-hmm. and how they move beyond those problems by realizing they're in a community and sharing with one another.
Yeah. And you've done a lot of work nationally over the last 20 years in the responsible fatherhood field. And so how does our work complement or influence that national discussion around engaging non-custodial fathers specifically as assets to their children and yeah. families? And we've looked at the research, right? And talked about what you have to have in place if you're going to have effective programs.
Absolutely.
Like this. But what are you seeing nationally, and what's our place in this national discourse?
Well, that's an excellent question, and you know I have an answer for that. We got an answer for that. Well, and you know, first of all, let me say that the responsible fatherhood field has had some real successes, but it's had some significant challenges. And part of the challenges that it's experienced is the challenge of scale, sustainability, and penetration, if you will. And what do I mean by that? Well, first, there's a lot of many things that needs to happen in order to secure outcomes for children, mm-hmm. which means that it's not enough to have a small program, mm-hmm. you know, working in isolation, that's essentially working with a small number of people to change the course of things as they are occurring in our community. So we recognize that we have to mobilize a substantial set of resources to do that and get people on the same page, if you will, a collective impact, mm-hmm. have a collective impact, if you will, and get people motivated by the same objectives. And so one of the things that FFHC recognizes is the ability to have to do that. And part of our strategy in advancing that is really getting a robust set of partners that can provide a very diverse set of services that address the multiple barriers that our fathers are confronted with. The second piece of that is that it's sustainability, right? Mm-hmm. So the sustainability elements are that, you know, we don't have enough money to fund new projects every day to address the problems that we're confronting in our community. But if we just think about it, if we were to come together as a collective and have a collective objective, we can bring our resources together and do what we're already doing more effectively, more in concert, and more focused on a particular objective. And so we think that is a critical piece of what FFHC is attempting to do and model as something that could be replicable across the nation. So that's critical for us. The last piece is penetration. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been in this business for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And you would almost think that while we see some embracement of fatherhood and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. you would almost think we weren't here 20 years ago. That is to say that there's so much that we haven't done to transform the way our social service delivery system is interacting with fathers. And to the extent that we fail to penetrate that system, which is already funded and already advancing the outcomes for families, for mothers and children, we do ourselves a disservice. Mm-hmm. So I think those are the things that we're trying to do and trying to kind of establish as a part of our model.
Yeah. And I know the other thing too that we constantly talk about is our partners, right? And we've embraced a kind of collective impact initiative that's really predicated on cross-sector public-private partnerships, right? Community-based partners. And I just want to give a shout-out to some of our partners who've been on the front lines with us, like Felix Family Services, Safer Foundation, North Lawndale Employment Network, Center for New Horizons, Chicago Urban League, Metropolitan Family Services, and the Jane Addams Resource Corporation, who are providing job training and placement services for these fathers and some male responsibility workshops. So let's talk a little bit about this idea of gender roles. This is something that comes up all the time. And as you've talked about a lot, fathers are typically viewed as providers, right, and mothers are typically viewed as nurturers. Do these gender roles presently hold in the black community?
Look, in the black community, women have always worked. I mean, that has never been kind of the reality of the African American community, and here's the thing is that what we're seeing as a result of the global restructuring, the way our economy is now working, is that the ability of everyone, but particularly black men, to secure jobs that create a living wage is increasingly more challenging. And let me just say, you know, people kind of have focused on this issue about black men as a provider and their presumed failures, around that issue, and which is somewhat problematic because the intersection between this restructuring and discrimination and how it has impacted the black community more particularly and black men more specifically has been enormous. And I just want to point out one thing that people fail to remember when they're throwing out all these negative statistics. In the 50s, when we had the highest level of black male participation in the labor market, we had the highest rate of marriage, so that we've seen since. Mm-hmm. So there, that tells you something, right, about the nexus or the connection between economic viability and marriage. But with respect to these gender roles that you specifically talked to, let me just say this. I think in the black community, I think those gender roles have always been flexible because of the challenge and the requirements of dual-parent households in the black community traditionally. And what's happening now is that, however, is that many black men who are experiencing those economic disjunctures who see their role as provider being kind of taken away from them are challenged by that, and in some ways kind of demoralized by it, mm-hmm. because obviously if you can't provide for yourself and your family, it has a distinct impact on you.
Right.
And I think to the extent that we, and this is some of the things that we talk about with our guys, right, that in mm-hmm. fact, just because you're not working doesn't mean that you should be less of a father or you're less of a man.
Right.
And so we have to send that message, because sometimes it takes a little while to get the guys back into the labor market, but they shouldn't. That doesn't mean that they can't be a father to their children. They can't be supportive of the women in their life who are also trying to produce positive outcomes for their children. It's just critical that they recognize that their provider role is just one feature of what they should do on this earth.
Right. And in fact, that is a part of the conversation in our peer-to-peer work.
That's right. That's right.
That occurs every Monday night. I'm doing a plug here. Every Monday night at Dawson from 6 to 8, we have the brothers together and fathers only, men only peer-to-peer sessions where we have this conversation about definition, role, and responsibility. And as Kirk just pointed out, I mean, one of the topics of discussion is the role of a father and how he's engaged when he's been unemployed for a year, 2 years, or even when he is employed, he has a child support order, and so his take-home pay is less, and in many cases, it results in a loss of self-esteem,
right,
for some of these fathers, and so we challenge them to rise above that and to see their value is something more than money, more than a financial contribution.
That's exactly right. And you know that when we talk to the brothers, what's amazing to me is that there's so many people running around saying that that black men don't care for their kids. But, you know, the research, by the way, is very contrary to that.
Mm-hmm.
The research says, in fact, that if you compare African-American men with Latino and white men, mm-hmm. that in fact African-American men tend to live closer to the kids and interact mm-hmm. with them more regularly mm-hmm. when they're in non-custodial status. So that's information that you would not normally get, right, if you mm-hmm. listen to the narrative that seems to be generated mm-hmm. More broadly. So and you know that how committed and how concerned many mm-hmm. of these brothers are when we're in those peer-to-peer meetings with them about their kids. And so, you know, much of what we do
right.
and what we're trying to suggest runs counter mm-hmm. to the narrative that has been generated for far too long.
Right. And can you speak a little bit to the to this idea of nurturing? I mean, we mm-hmm. talked about the aspect right. of provision.
Right.
But this idea of fathers as nurturers, I think that's a little harder for people to get their arms around. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, the issue is that fathers nurture different from mothers. And I think that's what people have to understand. And if you look at any of the developmental literature on children, Kyle Pruitt, for example, has mm-hmm. produced a lot of that literature, which talks about the different ways that men support child development. It's through physical development. It's through supporting them in risk-taking, and I don't mean dangerous things, but it's kind of pushing the limit of their capacity to do certain things, which tests their abilities. So men have a very specific function in the child development realm. And this is why our work is also so important, because not only do men support that physical development, mm-hmm. they also support that emotional development. And mm-hmm. part of the emotional development for children is the sense of safety and mm-hmm. security. And I often tell a story. My daughter, who you know, mm-hmm. is graduating high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she went on this little retreat, and they had to write this little letter mm-hmm. about their family, right? Mm-hmm. And she wrote this little passage in the letter where she said, you know, Dad, when you're traveling and then you come back home and I hear you come in the door and turn the doorknob, you know, it's then I can relax and go to sleep. And I'm just mm-hmm. wondering, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering how many children, and I know how many children feel that way mm-hmm. Because they're looking for that additional security. They're looking for that additional validation. And men do that for children. Mm-hmm. Not to say that women don't, because I want to be clear, mm-hmm. but I think And that's an additional validation that supports the development of children.
Yeah, and that's important for non-custodial fathers to understand, right? I mean, you and I are not non-custodial fathers, right? So let's just get that out.
Yeah.
but that's who we serve. That's who our members are.
So
this is important for them because in many cases they're not turning the doorknob.
That's right.
Right?
That's
so they're not putting the key in the door. So that's just, I think, really important. As a subset of this question around gender roles, though, I wanted to ask you another question about this idea of protector.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we talked about provision, we talked about nurturing, but another role that's ascribed to men is that of protector. And given the situation in our community and in many urban communities, particularly with young black males, how should we talk about that?
Well, you know, what I would say about that is that I'm going to go back to what I said earlier about validation. First of all, I think a lot of our boys and girls in our community are looking for validation and safety. Mm-hmm. And part of the challenge in our community, and I don't want to go into all the stats. We don't need to go into all the stats on what's going on, unfortunately, in some of our communities around violence.
Right.
But some of the challenges in our communities is that those mechanisms for recruiting our youth into our cultural frame and mm-hmm. into a common understanding of what defines community has not articulated itself as well as it used to in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So so where youth are finding safety or where they're finding this sense of validation is often in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would argue that one of the roles of fathers in modeling this is to be present. And I can't tell you the number of times. So I was in this McDonald's, and there was a bunch of black kids, boys and girls, and they were just acting the fool. they were just cutting up, and people were looking at them. Nobody was saying one word to them, and I said, "Now, folks, you know you can act better than that."
Mm-hmm.
They stopped because they know they could. You know, mm-hmm. they know better.
Mm-hmm.
And they stopped and they straightened up.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, you know, if we're afraid of saying things to our youth, if we're afraid of holding them accountable to their behavior, guess what they're going to do? they're going to engage in behavior that's not what they should be doing.
Yeah. You know? And the other thing, too, I mean, this is such an important question, I think, because the other aspect of this is this idea of protection as a collective vocation, right? This
Absolutely.
Idea that protecting one's children is not an individual act or practice, right? I mean, you and I talk about this often. I mean, you and I could be the greatest fathers of the year. We can get Fathers of the Year awards and put it on our mantle. That doesn't keep someone from walking up to us.
Right.
And, you know, but they have to be dealt with when they do that.
That's right.
You know, but it doesn't keep them from approaching us the wrong way. But what's really required is this idea of a definition or this idea of manhood with respect to protection as a collective vocation so that men are organized in ways to provide safety. And this is not uniquely a male responsibility, right? I mean, women and young people need to be diligent. But
Absolutely.
I think there is a unique role and responsibility of men to make sure their communities are safe. So anyway, I appreciate that.
Yeah, and we got a caller. We have a caller on the line, Jackie from Roseland. You want to take that call?
Sure.
Jackie?
Uh-huh, I'm here.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. How can we help you? Got a question?
I sure do. I was just listening to the conversation, and I just was curious. I know that you just mentioned that you are not a non-custodial father. So
that's,
I just was wondering, you know, how do you relate to working with gentlemen who are non-custodial fathers in your corporation when you don't have, you know, like the first hand of not being a custodial father?
Right. Well, let me just say this. I am not a non-custodial father because I broke that cycle. I was raised without my father.
Okay.
So my experience is on the other end with not having a father. So I do have experience in some ways of being having a non-custodial situation because I was, in fact, raised without my dad, and I know what that experience felt like. But with that said, I've been working with brothers who've been non-custodial for over 20 years, so I got a set of experiences and understanding of some of the challenges and barriers and plights that they confront. And so that's the context in which I do my work, and I also draw on my personal experience having not had a father in my life when I came up.
Yeah, I appreciate that question. We also have staff. Okay. We also have staff that are non-custodials. But I also want to encourage us to think about it in another way. It's akin to professionals, social service providers who perhaps work with the homeless, right? They may have never been homeless, right? But I know some of these organizations, and they do an outstanding job. So I just want you to encourage to look at it that way as well. It's a good question, though.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate you calling in today, Jackie.
Thank you.
So I mean, one of the questions that comes up often is the role of women. I'm glad that was a sister that called,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so, what is your opinion about the role of women with respect to advancing responsible fatherhood?
Absolutely essential. You know, when the responsible fatherhood movement came on board over 20 years ago, there was a lot of discussion. Well, maybe we should take this after the break. We're going to break for a moment. Please continue to tune in. We got more for you.
The talk of Chicago and the voice of the nation is 1690 WBON, Berwyn, Chicago.
Help save a life. Join the Joseph Assignment Global Initiative for an evening of elegance to end hunger with the tenors Cook, Dixon, and Young, formerly of the Three More Tenors, on Saturday, April 20th, and Sunday, April 21st, at New Faith Concert Hall in Matteson, Illinois, just 20 minutes from downtown Chicago off Interstate 57. Early bird tickets and VIP packages are available. Partner with the Joseph Assignment Global Initiative and the Tenors, Cook, Dixon, and Young, formerly of the Three More Tenors, to end hunger. To purchase tickets, call 866-LIVE-010. That's 866-LIVE-010. Or josephassignment.org. That's josephassignment.org. And purchase your tickets today. Sponsored by AARP of Illinois, Luster Products, Partners in Obstetrics and Women's Health, Dr. Pierre, and the Joseph Assignment Global Initiative.
WBON kicks off Health Awareness Month on Saturday, May 4th in WBON's Legacy Center with a candid conversation on improving the health of our families. 64% of African-American children are raised in homes without a father. 72% of our children are born to unwed mothers. We're going beyond statistics to deal with our reality. We're moving the conversation from dysfunction to how to raise healthy, productive children. Join our distinguished panel for an interactive, candid conversation on getting beyond our family drama. Saturday, May 4th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at WVON's Legacy Center. Seating is limited. The event is free, but you must register. Visit WVON.com or call 773-336-3435. Sponsored by the Urban Health Initiative at the University of Chicago Medicine.
Do you work for a company that blocks websites you want to visit?
Oh, come on!
Download the iHeartRadio app and enjoy WBON at work.
Shh,
we won't tell your boss.
talk of Chicago is 1690 WVON Sherman, Chicago.
So we're back.
Yes, we are.
With Dr. Kirk Harris, Saquon Lawrence, Director of Fathers, Family, Healthy Communities. And I'm here with Dr. Kirk Harris, my co-moderator. And before we went to break, we were talking about the role of women with respect to supporting and advancing a responsible fatherhood practice. And you were saying?
I was saying that it's absolutely, positively, and without question, essential. You know, there's a lot of literature that talks about moms as gatekeepers for children. And I don't like to cast it in that way, because when you talk about it as a gatekeeper role, it seems malicious and negative. But it is true that our court systems traditionally see mothers as the primary caretaker and vehicle of support for children. And that bias often operates to the disadvantage of men. And if you're a low-income father, that is of particular challenge. So I think where we are at this point is a recognition that if we're going to really do the best that we can do for children, we've got to have fathers and men partner with women and co-parent with women to advance those outcomes.
Let me say to our listeners, though, we're really excited about being here at WVON and being part of the WVON family. And let me just say also that we went to a party a few weeks ago. The WVON is celebrating its 50th anniversary. And boy, I tell you, it was the party of the year. My wife and I went, and Roy Ayers, it was at Alejandra's. And I got to tell you, it was unbelievable, brother. It was the best party I've been to in a long time. But WVON is now on iHeartRadio. If you have a smartphone or tablet, download the iHeartRadio app and enjoy WVON wherever you are. Remember, you can always listen live at WVON.com. Also, check out Perry Small. Next week on the Perry Small Show, we'll recap the weekend's political headlines and so much more. You don't want to miss it. Don't forget to go to WVON.com and take our daily listeners poll. Also, check the Cliff Kelly Show next week. Cliff will be talking about the latest news regarding the Boston Marathon attack. And the question he's posing is, will bombing affect immigration? He'll be also talking about the Florida abortion bill, black women lawmakers, and all the news from the weekend. All that and more on the next Cliff Kelly Show. So stay in touch with WVON on Facebook. Like our new page, search for WVON 1690 AM, and look for the 50th logo. On Twitter, follow at WVON 1690. And call. We're taking calls this afternoon at 773-591-1690. And you can listen on the web at www.wvon.com.
And in fact, my brother, we've got Stephen on the line from the Gold Coast. Let's take his call. Stephen, how can we help?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to make the...
Go right ahead, Stephen.
Did we lose him?
Did we lose him? Oops, I think we lost Stephen. Okay. Yeah, well, we lost Stephen. I think we have another call holding. Let's go for that call. Good afternoon.
Hello there, Captain Kirk.
Yes, and who am I speaking with?
Beam me up, Captain Kirk. Sit next to my brother, Saquon. This is Akila. How are you?
Hey, Akila.
How are you, Akila?
I'm doing excellent. Congratulations. Welcome aboard to our airways, and I've been listening. Great show.
Oh, thank you.
Great topic. I'm encouraged by it, Saquon, because I know what's inside of you. On the other hand, Captain Kirk, I can only imagine. So listen, I just wanted to thank you for participating in what we've got to get done here with regard to our children, our men, and our women.
Yes.
at such a time as this. And on that note, I'm going to say thank you, and I will be listening. How often are you going to be on now? Every Sunday?
Every Sunday for the next 9 weeks.
Yeah, nine or 10 weeks or so.
Yeah, and from 2 to 3 Central.
Okay, excellent.
Tune
thank
in.
You. I look forward to it.
More to come. Thank you for calling.
And Saquon.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
How's the family?
The family's great. Thanks for asking.
Oh,
I think they're listening.
Oh, wonderful. Hello, Euphora. Yeah. How's my brother, Meshaw?
Meshaw is fine. Thanks for asking. Good. He's not listening. I can almost guarantee. We got to get him.
Oh, I can guarantee you he's not either. But
right.
I see the call. She asked about you.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell him you asked, though.
Thank you, Akiva.
Okay. All right, take care.
Bye-bye. We've got, it looks like we've got Steve back from the Gold Coast. Let's try to take Steve. Steve, we lost you. How are you?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to point out that I do think that it's certainly important that we strive in this society to create as much of an intact family unit as possible, and with mothers and fathers each having their roles. And certainly those role models are essential for the healthy development of children.
Right.
At the same time, I think sometimes we tend to get caught up in the past and romanticize the past in this country, because at one time we had families that were much more intact. We had a lower divorce rate, with all these sorts of things, which we, on the surface, it would appear to be positive. But the reality was that there were all sorts of constraints within law, for instance, that didn't allow women to get divorced for many years because they didn't have the kind of legal protection. So in other words, yes, they were technically still married to a man, and they couldn't get out of that marriage. That didn't make it a good marriage, and it didn't make it a healthy environment for children.
Absolutely.
And with all due respect to people out there who think that, you know, that this is some silver bullet, that if only we could keep families together, mothers and fathers with children, there are plenty of fathers who, frankly, are doing their children the greatest favor in the world by not being involved in their lives, given the problems that those individuals have themselves. You know, if you're a lifetime criminal with an encyclopedic background with regard to your rap sheet, and you have there's no indication in your life that you plan to change that, the fact that you're not involved in your children's lives is probably a good thing.
Right.
And so I do think we need to recognize this, that sometimes, again, we get, you know, very romantic about the past, but there are a lot of reasons why people stayed in marriages culturally, economically, and so forth. They didn't want to stay in them, and being raised in an unhealthy environment in which two people, frankly, hate each other, two parents, is not preferential to divorce.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let me just comment on that real quickly, Steve. First of all, what we're arguing is not necessarily the case for marriage, although we think that that's certainly an option for people where it's appropriate. What we're arguing is whether women and men are romantically involved or not, that they function cooperatively in support of their children. And so that's really where we are with our
families. And I understand that. That's absolutely a good point. And I was just part of that equation. I think some people will take out of it is the equation of marriage,
right.
But it certainly isn't limited. In other words, take out the marriage part of what I just said and just say two people working together to raise their children. Well, not always the best alternative, because if that one or more of those people lead a dysfunctional lifestyle, like I say, you're a lifelong criminal, you're a drug addict. I mean, frankly, not being in your children's life is probably the best favor you're doing to.
Well, I think we've got to be slightly careful about that, because I think I always say, and my brother Saquon always mentions that I always say appropriately involved, right? So that's true. Fathers who are appropriately involved are good for the kids. But the other question is you also have to see it from the child's side, because sometimes the child doesn't always appreciate that, but was looking for that person in their lives. And so you're right, that person might not be the greatest person, but that's from your perspective, not from the child's perspective. And I think we often have to be careful about that. And so I hear you, and I think you raise a good point, and I thank you for calling in this afternoon.
So we have a couple of more questions for you, Kirk, because in going forward, we don't know how many more formats we're going to have like this, because we got a lot of guests who are going to be joining us in the studio.
Right.
But this is just a wonderful way, I think, to start this New Man Project. It's just you and I to kind of talk and give the listeners a kind of opportunity to kind of eavesdrop in the way that we talk all the time. But another question I think of interest what do you believe are the greatest opportunities we have to strengthen the engagement of low income non custodial fathers with their families? I mean, I want to talk more about what, again, those assets and opportunities, mm-hmm. and how we could bring those to bear, towards strengthening our families.
Well, first of all, I think there's a will and a desire. I mean, I don't need to tell you this, that when we're sitting in those peer-to-peer meetings and we hear the fathers, the brothers talking about their children, and we see their kind of, in many cases, the pain mm-hmm. that exists as a result of that lack of connection or the struggle that they have with that, we know that that pain is also present more than likely than not in their children, not mm-hmm. only the fathers. So I think the opportunity is that there's a willing interest for fathers to engage. And I think there's some positive opportunities to bring down some of the barriers. We're going to be having a show about child support, and mm-hmm. I think there's some positive movements. We're not quite there yet, but there's been some positive movements to make child support process less aggressive, less disruptive to the family ecology. Mm-hmm. That was a tough word to say on Sunday with not enough sleep. But anyway, that family ecology is really delicate. And when you engage systems like mm-hmm. child support or other support systems that are essentially undergirding low-income families, it can be a challenge. Mm-hmm. And so, but I think that these systems are beginning to recognize that if they're going to advance the outcomes that they say we want to see in terms of child outcomes, they mm-hmm. well better look at the impact that the effects of these systems have on the parents or the children, and the way they kind of cause dysfunction within the family, i.e., you know, a father who has an arrearage of $20,000 and in a child support payment that's more than he can pay may not find his way to his child's door, you know.
Right.
So these are significant barriers, particularly if he thinks he's going to be held in contempt and
right.
thrown in jail, you know. So right. these are problems that we have to confront in our system.
Right. Well, I mean, that's an opportunity to talk about what the research talks about in terms of what we need to have in place to strengthen families, particularly when you have non-custodial fathers who are not appropriately engaged. And you talked about child support. We're going to have a show. We're going to have Nora Stevens from the Illinois Department of Child Support on. We also know, though, that in addition to having a relationship with child support and having child support orders mounted downward, mm-hmm. right, if someone's come out of prison for five right. years, for instance, of a $60,000, $70,000 child support order, mm-hmm. We know that's important. The research talks about that. The research talks about having legal services
right.
Available for fathers who may need to get their right. have their visitation reestablished. Right. They want to see their children. As you pointed out, most of our fathers, if not all of them, volunteer and want to be better fathers right. and want to be involved with their children. Fathers, family, health, the communities have legal services in addition to a very strong memo of understanding with child support. The third thing is workforce development. We're going to have a show on
right.
that.
Right.
But our fundamental theory is if you coordinate these types of activities, these services, then our children will have better outcomes.
Absolutely.
If the father is financially supporting his children and we help that father by helping him access workforce development, job training, sector-driven demand side, for instance, which means that they're in training predicated on real jobs that's out there
right.
in several sectors. We also know that if they're engaged in peer-to-peer work, which I believe is the most important work where we deal with this issue of accountability, responsibility, and where men know they're not alone, if you can tie those things together, child support, workforce development, legal services, peer-to-peer, our theory of change says that these fathers will be engaged appropriately with their children and our children will have better outcomes. The next question we have
for
you.
We have a caller. We have Bobby from Irving Park.
Oh, great.
You want to take that call?
Yes, sir.
Okay, hold on. Bobby?
Hey, good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Yeah, I'm super. I was calling to talk about, so I have a parent who wants to get involved. So how do you implement your project, and do you have any success stories on fathers and their connection with their children?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I appreciate the question. We have several, you know, we don't name names, but we have several cases One that I think about often is in our child support workshops with the Department of Child Support Services. And we have cases where the mothers come in because the father now is working. The father now has demonstrated his willingness and capacity to be there for her and the children. And she goes in and works to get that child support order modified or terminated. That's important. When that can happen, we also are encouraging fathers in our peer-to-peer work, right, to resolve conflict. It's this whole issue of forgiveness, right, and being able to put yourself in the shoes of that mother, right, and look at the situation from her side, and it's really. We may need to do a whole show on it because it's so interesting. And I'm in those sessions with these fathers every Monday night. And so we've seen some transformation there. We also know that we've had fathers who, because their self-esteem has been enhanced through the peer-to-peer work and through our partners, who I mentioned earlier, were able to gain employment, and therefore they're able to pay child support in ways they weren't before. So the list goes on. We do have success stories. It's a good question because we really want to talk more about what works. We really want to talk more about what we're doing that's right, what's good about our relationships. So I appreciate that question.
So how does a young man get involved in to the FHC, is it, project if he's not in one of your partners or organizations?
Well, he can call 312-252-0460, extension 120, 312-252-0460, extension 120, or check out the website at www.ffhc.org. That's www.ffhc.org.
All right. Thank okay. you.
Thank you, Bobby. We appreciate your call.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, as we wind down, there's a couple of things I just want to mention. So we're going to be on the WVON, which is the Talk of Chicago, like that, the voice of the nation, every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. And our upcoming invited guests are folks like Bill Laurie, who's a special assistant to the president at Chicago Community Trust. I talked to Bill earlier today, and he'll be in the studio. Susan Taylor, founder of National Cares Mentoring Movement, and editor emeritus at Essence Magazine, Dr. Marlana Karinga, founder and chairman of US Organization and creator of Kwanzaa, Phil Jackson, executive director of Black Star right here in Chicago, Joe Jones and Kenny Braswell, two friends of ours, Joe Jones from the Center for Urban Families in Baltimore, and Kenny Braswell, executive director of National Clearinghouse for Responsible Fatherhood in D.C., and we've asked them to come on because they're in keeping with the spirit of talking about what works. They have two outstanding organizations that's doing great things on the East Coast. Also, our friend Angela Kenyatta of ISIS Productions, who's doing a film on Black fathers. I just mentioned Nora Stevens from the Illinois Department of Child Support Services to talk about how fathers should engage the Illinois Department of Child Support. Yvette Moyo, our friend and one of the women and fathers movement in the country, executive director of Real Men Cook Charities. And, of course, our fathers. From time to time, we want to have our fathers on, who are our members and the reason we do this work. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm feeling really positive, too, because I think the environment in the nationally is a really good one right now. I think we got President Obama, who has been promoting fatherhood, and it's been my experience having done some work with the White House and other national organizations that there's a lot of movement right now around fatherhood. And so this is a time to be calling the resources, if you will, to bear to break down some of those barriers that are really preventing men from engaging with their children. There's no better time than now.
That's right. That's right. And Bobby, who just called earlier, asked how fathers can get engaged or contact us. Also, next Thursday, April 25th, at Dawson, which is where our field offices are on 39th and State, there's a resource fair. We'll have a booth there or a table there. That's at 9 o'clock, and that's at 3901 South State. That's the Dawson Resource Fair. And let me just say a little bit about why we're working so closely with city colleges. We really are excited about the city colleges' reinvention plan and their college to careers programs. These are programs that are sector-driven, demand-driven, and the training, 8 weeks, 16-week certificate programs in areas like manufacturing, transportation, health, culinary, and construction. And these are areas where there are jobs, where there's still demand, notwithstanding the unemployment rate, particularly in the black community. These are sectors where there's still robust activity. And so we're trying really hard to get our fathers enrolled in those programs and to help them be enrolled in them programs so that they can be economically self-sufficient and then financially support their children. So we're getting really close to the end. You got any final remarks, Dr. Harris?
Yeah, well, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, as you know, there's been a lot of dialogue, and you know, I try to bridge this world of this academic world with this practitioner world, and one of the challenges associated with this is recognizing the madness, right, of what we as academics sometimes, the machinations we go through, because there's this narrative that's out there that says that there's not enough compelling evidence to suggest that low-income non-custodial fathers can have a positive influence on their children's lives. And my retort or counter to that is, do we really need a study? What do the children say? Do they need a study to know that fathers matter to them? And so I think I want to cut through some of the madness and suggest that this is really a time for us to figure out how we can mobilize all the resources that are in our community, with fathers being a resource that has gone untapped for too long in our community. And I think this is a real opportunity for us to tap into that magnificent resource.
Yeah. And let me also say before we go that we've been really helped and supported by the Open Society Foundations and the Chicago Community Trust, two of our, well, they are our primary funders.
Thank you.
The Woods Fund of Chicago is supporting us. And I got to tell you, that the grant we just got from the Woods Fund is huge, because it's a small grant. But what it signals is that we have a model, right, that has aligned itself with the people, right? With because if you know the Woods, they don't fund you unless you're really committed to organizing and working with those who you seek to serve in a more intimate way, right? And it's a very bottoms up kind of grant making strategy. So we're really proud of that. And so our fathers will be engaged in organizing one-on-one. A lot of our fathers, as you know, Kirk, are really interested in several issues.
Absolutely.
Like education and mass incarceration.
Absolutely.
And so we're really excited about that. So I would be remiss if I did not thank them for their support. I did have one other announcement to make. We're going to be at Olive Harvey on May 2nd. And we're asking our members, that's from 11:30 to 2:30, we are asking our members and other non-custodial fathers who are interested in working with us to want to join us to show up at Olive Harvey May 2nd at 11:30 to 2:30, and that's at 10001 South Woodlawn, Olive Harvey College.
Okay.
Do we have a caller?
Yes, we have a caller. We have Robert on the line. Robert, how can we help?
Hey, how you guys doing, man?
All right, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, I'm listening to your program, and I think your subject is an awesome subject, and I think it's something that it's a lot of thought goes into, you know, the fatherhood, and you said something earlier that says that, you know, most women, they kind of like, they get the most power in the courtroom because they're basically the most to be the sole provider. They're basically a nurturer or whatever, so they kind of win out a lot in court. But I think that we have to give a lot of consideration and thought to there's a lot of single fathers out here. You know, they're doing the mother and father job.
That's true.
But unfortunately,
true.
The fathers don't get the proper acknowledgement and accolades because, you know, the men have such a, you know, some men have bad rap when it comes to good things.
Right.
But the part that we don't look at, unfortunately, and things that we don't talk about publicly is that, you know, you have relationships that go bad.
Yeah.
The mother's being vindictive toward the father.
Right.
And in the end, the child suffers. Yeah. That's a conversation that we very seldom have.
That's true.
And it's almost embarrassing to bring up. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And we thank you for your call. We got to wrap up. We thank you. You were right on the tail end of the show. And